V-minus 77. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Before opening his mouth to begin an uncomfortable and potentially divisive explanation of what he had experienced on Thursday night, Dan looked around the room and found his eyes settling on the door to the basement. It was inaccessible for Henry's wheelchair, so out of the question as a secure discussion area at the moment, but memories of the previous year rattled through his mind. "How long would it take to fully shield my old basement again?" he asked Phil, in reference to the signal-blocking technology the privacy-conscious prepper had installed during the basement conversion and then removed after contact day, when Dan realized that his borderline obsessive paranoia was no longer necessary. Phil gave it a few seconds of thought, then turned his palms up in a slow shrug. "The actual work? 8-10 hours? Sourcing everything we'd need? At least a few days? But I'll level with you, Dan. That shielding gave you peace of mind more than anything else. The walls down there are thick as hell and they're under the ground. No one is eavesdropping on you in the basement so long as you have this sealed door and so long as you start keeping all the tech out of there again like you used to. I could hook up the old security center today if you want it, with feeds from all over town. But in terms of the shielding, the only protection it gave you that you can't get from basic common sense security practices was the protection against EMPs. If you're worried about that, I can get a Faraday cage for your computer and we can hardwire a secure connection like you used to have." Dan rubbed his chin in deep thought. "And next door? We would just need to keep digital devices out and get a better door like I have here, and then Emma's basement, our basement, I mean, would be totally secure too?" He quickly glanced at Emma. "If you're okay with that."
"I guess I'm not opposed," she said, clearly not too enthused either.
The day when Dan and Phil had ripped the shielding from the walls of Dan's basement had been symbolic of his post-contact day freedom from a time of secrets and pressure, and it saddened Emma that such freedom seemed to be a thing of the past.
"But Dan, if you're worried about them listening in, I think that other thing is probably the main thing to worry about right now."
Dan instinctively put a hand to the back of his neck. Sensing everyone else's confusion, he then dived right into an explanation. "The government or some secret agency put a chip in my neck," he said. "I didn't know, but it detected the pain I felt on Friday night when the messengers contacted me. By the time I woke up, and that couldn't have even been a full minute after it started, there were agents standing in the bedroom. They grabbed me, grabbed Emma, and took us away for individual questioning. I've been under close surveillance all year, and if they can get to me that quickly in Italy, you can be damn sure they've been hanging around here a lot closer than we ever could have thought."
"Jesus," Henry groaned. Like most of the others, he wore an expression of shock. Clark's, however, was a look of full-on rage. Godfrey had naturally only told the GCC representatives of the contact event and nothing about the forceful detention, so this particular part of the story hadn't reached Birchwood via Timo.
"They took you away?" he asked, fury in the words. "So that's why your emergency tracker said you activated it at the military complex in Milan when you told me that was nothing to worry about?"
"Well, it wasn't the main thing to worry about," Dan replied, sounding slightly defensive. "It's not the most important part."
Clark breathed very slowly. "Did they hurt you?"
"Not on purpose," Dan said, choosing his words carefully. "They grabbed me, and I saw one of them sneaking up on Emma. She was outside with her headphones on. I fought two of them off for long enough to run out of the bedroom, but another one tackled me from the side and my head hit the floor pretty hard. It knocked me unconscious, but sort of slowly. I didn't just black out straight away. I guess the guy who tackled me was holding me down pretty hard. I couldn't breathe easily."
"Did he speak? Did you get his name? Any birthmarks? Tattoos? Give me something to—"
"Clark, it's done," Dan said, cutting off the thought of natural justice that so often seemed to be where Clark's mind went whenever he became aware that someone he cared about had been mistreated.
"Anyway," Emma interjected, "that's the thing about surveillance and security and everything else. I'm not so sure they really have been watching and listening to us all year in terms of actual eavesdropping, because we've all talked about a lot of stuff in the past year, all kinds of ideas and theories. All kinds of little things they didn't know about, but which they definitely would have wanted to know more about if they'd heard us mention them at all. Do you know what I mean?"
No one said they didn't.
But about these chips in our necks, she went on. I have one too, but do you think there's really any way they could hear us? Through the skin? I would say no, and from their perspective, I can see why it makes sense for them to have something in there to alert them if we ever feel sudden pain, contact pain. So I don't see any reason to doubt that was their sole purpose. I understand why they'd want one in Dan's neck more than why they'd want one in mine, but I guess they wanted to be thorough.
And we're getting them removed soon, Dan clarified. Slater said so, and she doesn't gain anything from lying to me when all a lie would do is make me angry. She doesn't want anyone to know what they did to me, and she knows I'll talk if they piss me off any more than they already have. Clark grunted out an uncertain reaction. I don't know, man. She might know how set you are on staying out of the spotlight, especially if they have been watching and listening in all this time. But even if they haven't, the only public comments you've made in the past year have all been about you feeling like you've done your part and wanting to leave everything else to the elected leaders. Mr. Bird waved his hand slowly, half raising it like a schoolchild. So for those of us who missed the start, you were contacted on Friday and the government knew straight away? That's all we know for sure? That's part of it, Dan said. I had a vision of the Buenos Aires Gravison in a dream, and a policeman in the dream told me someone was inside and had just taken President Slater hostage. The Japanese Prime Minister, too. And my watch in the dream said it was Saturday morning at 11. I saw a GeoSov flag hanging from a window on the top floor. Then, in real life, when I spoke to Slater, she said she wasn't staying at the Gravison but was scheduled to meet him there at that time. And the security services found a GeoSov flag in the exact room whose window I saw it hanging from, so Slater and Godfrey and everyone else know it wasn't a false alarm. And that's all we know for sure, Emma confirmed. Dan gulped. Well, Emma's brow furrowed.
Well?
I didn't want to tell you this next part while the guards at the airport were definitely watching and listening to us, because I'm still trying to make sense of it. And I didn't want to tell you in the car because I didn't want to tell Clark before Tara or my dad. I don't want any more secrets or some people knowing more than others. I don't want any of this, but I definitely don't want that. She nodded in understanding. Oh, and just quickly on that, Dan said. Clark, remember the guy who took us to the facility on contact day? I know his full name, and I told the agents when I was trying to make sure they knew not to mess with me. I know the facility, too. I mapped his movements with a tracking device, but I didn't tell them that. They don't know how I know, and they might even think the messengers told me. Anyway, the secret base is out at Heron Lake Reservoir, and it's completely underground. You know how Billy Kendrick always said it's easier to hide something underground than restrict a huge sector of airspace, especially if you want the very existence of the place to be secret? It's exactly that. The old idea of being able to hide the fact that there's a secret, not just hiding the secret itself. Okay, man, Clark said, that was smart, but it's not exactly the most important thing right now, is it? What's the next part that even Emma doesn't know? Dan spat it out. I know how much this Zanzibar triangle looks like an obvious hoax, but I think it's real. There was a shape on the flag I saw in my dream, like white dots in the corner of the flag making a kind of constellation shape. It wasn't a constellation. I just mean that kind of thing like you see on an Australian flag or whatever. Anyway, that exact shape is pretty clearly visible in the blurry photos we've seen of the triangle. You know those little jewels on it? All the brightest ones that reflect the most light are arranged in the same shape as the arrangement I saw on the flag. In the dream, I think the messengers were telling me they were going to plant it.
Why?
Emma asked, one word summing up everyone's feelings. I'm just going to admit that I flat out don't know, Dan said. And I don't know why I don't know. I don't know why they're being so cryptic again. Last year it was because they wanted to guide me to the fourth plaque with enough provenance to make the discovery seem plausible without exposing Walker's hoax, because they didn't want to destabilize Earth any more than they had to. But now? Everyone already knows they're real. Everyone saw them a mile down the street, standing at the drive-in with a cable connected to my neck and a force field holding everyone else back. I don't get it.
Well, it's a triangle, Tara chimed in. And we know they like triangles. The first vision you had last year was a triangle in the sky, and then it was a triangular shape between the main locations of other stuff that led us to Salida. Remember? What Trey saw at Lolo? The California fireball? And then Salida? So a triangle does fit in with everything else, is all I'm saying. At least we know that much.
But so does everyone else, Timo Fiori mused, breaking a long and thoughtful silence. If someone wanted to hoax an artifact, it would probably look like this. With the timing and location so neatly benefiting the ELF, I can't see past the idea of a hoax, either by the ELF themselves or maybe even by the Geosovs.
The Geosovs? Dan asked, clearly having not even considered this.
Timo shrugged. Think about it. Maybe the messengers were telling you there was going to be a Geosov hoax. You saw this constellation-like arrangement in the same dream that told you the Geosovs were going to try to take Slater hostage. Correct. It therefore makes a degree of sense that the constellation was there to warn you that the Geosovs were going to do this, too.
Think back to the IDA hoax. Walker set everything up to fit in with the idea that the Nazis dumped that sphere off Miramar. Maybe the Geosovs are setting everything up to make it look like the ELF dumped this triangle.
Dan rubbed his eyes in exasperation, not in disagreement at Timo's well-argued point, but purely at his own frustrated confusion. The last thing he thought he'd be thinking about once again was whether something was a hoax or a genuinely extraterrestrial find. All over again, he felt sick to the pit of his stomach. Emma lifted her phone from her pocket and groaned, interrupting a conversation no one was enjoying. Like Dan, she hated Timo's suggestion, but reluctantly recognized that it might just be valid.
Focus 2020, she said. It's tonight, a Saturday special, and they want you on via satellite.
Me? Dan asked. He walked around to look at the list of names on her phone. All were written underneath a politely worded invitation from the desk of the show's much-respected host, Marion DeClercq. First came Billy Kendrick, a good friend of Dan's and a reasonable man. Next was Joe Crabb, the one-time shock jock who was now seen as a more balanced media personality. Thirdly, and certainly most surprisingly, was an unnamed Geosov spokesperson. Fourth was Caitlin Judd, the famous actress who had already appeared alongside Dan on the show on one previous occasion. People now associated her with aliens, especially due to her starring role in the critically panned movie The Fourth Plaque, which had almost ended her career when the final cut ended up being little more than a propaganda piece for William Godfrey's now defunct Global Space Commission. Most recently, she'd starred in a far more successful movie dramatizing the approach and eventual deflection of Comet Conte Abate, titled simply Il Diavolo. Officially, Caitlin had been booked to talk about that movie's home media release. She had asked some good questions on her previous appearances, though, and clearly knew what she was talking about. There was no way Dan was participating, but he looked forward to hearing what she had to say, as well as how Billy Kendrick and Joe Crabb would deal with a Geosov. It also mentioned that a final guest would be appearing via satellite, and that this was not a reference to Dan, who could round the panel out to six if he wished. Not a chance in hell, he said, exactly as Emma expected. I don't even know what's going on, and I'm staying out of the spotlight anyway.
Quite right, Clark said, nodding firmly.
Emma nodded too, though far less committally.
Shutting down a Geosov once and for all? Timo said, bucking the trend. It's enticing, Dan, and we have many hours to prepare.
Timo, Dan sighed. I wouldn't do this if the messengers themselves came down and asked me to.